sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Martin Page.
Hi, Mike.
And across the table, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hey, Mike.
And next to Bobby, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Scott and Andrew are not with us today.
Oh, aren't they? I didn't know. Oh, I didn't know.
They went off, no, went on a camp together, didn't they?
They're working.
That's not what I mean. Us.
They've got a gig. And today we are honored to have with us as our guest, Urban Olson. Urban, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you, Mike.
Urban's a, he's a musician. He's a sound supervisor. He does sound design. He does producing. He has a band. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Urban?
Where do I start? Came from Sweden in 95 and wanted to pursue a career as a musician and starting this band, Blend, with my friend Jared Coring. And after all the struggles, realized that I need to make some money and started you know, looking for other opportunities and, you know, in order to support what I wanted to do, and ended up working in film and TV and all these other things, and you know.
Well, that's great. Well, hey, thanks for sitting in with us, and we're going to be talking more to Urban later on because of what we're going to be talking about in the second half of the podcast. It's pretty timely for his own story. But before we get going, I wanted to talk about a couple things with you guys. Number one, I got an iPhone.
Yes, oh, my God, he went straight in.
I did.
But how long did it take for you to get it? Were you in line?
No, I was not in line. As a matter of fact, I don't understand the guys that stood in line because I knew the Apple stores were going to be open till midnight. And at 9 o'clock when I got done mixing, I was driving home and I went to the local Apple store and they had a whole stack of them and I picked one up. And I had done a little bit of homework, but the main thing about the iPhone and the reason why I want to talk about it here is because
it doesn't work.
Was that Bobby? Is that Bobby? And then we can move on.
Bobby, you don't love Apple.
No. I love Apple pie.
Listen, two things. I want to talk a little bit about cell phones and about the opportunities for songwriters and for musicians and cell phones, because right now ringtones are really huge and you can get your music as a ringtone and also, you know, on hold. If you can put somebody on hold, you can have a song play on that. And also Verizon, they have this capture technology where if you hear a song on one of their models of the phones, you can actually record what you're hearing and it'll look it up and tell you what the song is. And it's just, I mean, technology with phones is just amazing. I wanted to ask anybody out there, does anybody have a ringtone out there? Have you, I know you've done a ringtone, but you did it for a movie, right?
I did a ringtone for a movie and I did some really cheesy sounding ringtones in the early days of cell phones. I helped a friend who was starting to do that stuff and I had to help because basically we were creating the equivalent of standard MIDI files and these were just monophonic little synthesizer voices. So, I mean, it's hard to call those ringtones based on what ringtones are today, but I was a pioneer.
You were a pioneer.
It was.
Were you the?
It was
it was
in that family. It was in that family. It was definitely in that family. And my history, before I was even in music, I was a computer programmer and I used to design video games. And in those days, there was no such thing as a game composer. And back then, the computers could only play one note at a time if you could get them to do anything. Right. So actually, the ringtone sounded a lot like what those video games sounded like 15, 20 years before. So
wow.
It was perfect.
That's cool. And then you just did the ringtone for that movie. You did that custom.
Yeah, for Shoot 'em Up. The ringtone that is featured in the film Shoot 'em Up. I did.
And we'll soon be.
Will you get credit for that on the film?
Supposedly I do, yeah.
Wow. Ringtone by.
Are they going to, will they release that ringtone?
You know, I have no idea. I think it'll just be an additional audio credit or something like that. Because really what I was doing was considered audio post.
Yeah.
Production, you know, in the film, there was no ringtone. Everybody's just reacting to a sound that isn't there. And then we just basically came up with the sound to put in that made it look like, you know, made sense.
Wow.
Feature performance. No.
Mm-hmm. And Bobby, you said you've done a ringtone before?
Yeah, I actually did a mate of mine opened up, started a company about 9 years ago called mymobile.com. And it became, it was here. It was, and then basically he sold it to Universal Vivendi, Universal. for a lot of money, that I just helped him initially get the ringtones together. And at that stage, it was monophonic. It had to be monophonic MIDI files, and we had to make sure that I did it in Cubase. I had to make sure all the notes were exactly monophonic in legato, so there was never, you know, if you play two notes, da-da, can't have one note. Just be a little bit over the other one, otherwise it would freak it all out. So it was all very, very, very silly, and that kind of concept, all very monophonic. And then after not even about 9 months, we ended up doing four voices, and then it was audio files, and then it just 20-second audio files, you know, just standard MP3 audio.
Wow.
I don't think a lot of people realize, too, it's probably getting easier now as the phones get more powerful, but for a long time, doing a ringtone was not just one task, because there were so many different formats and so many different ways to get the stuff into the phones.
Right.
It was actually much more a technology job than a music job. The music part, you know, took 5 minutes, but then to get it to actually play on all the different platforms was a nightmare.
Well, didn't they? Yamaha made a little ringtone development box because a lot of the phones had that Yamaha chip in there that they were using. Hey, Martin, have you heard of any of your songs? Do you know where you can buy them to put them on ringtones or anything like that?
Yeah, I've found out just from, you know, looking through the websites and having my own MySpace page that the In the House of Stone and Light has a ringtone, but I think you can only get it through Virgin. And I believe that Mi Morena, the song I wrote for Josh Groban, is also a ringtone. And I think that's also on another strange, you know, one-off kind of thing. But I've never, ever gone into it. You know, it's something that I'm quite fascinated by, because I just can't quite grasp it at this moment that you would have, that it's become so lucrative. You know, I know a couple of friends of mine that, you know, predicted that this would be huge. Somebody I'd actually worked with Zomba Publishing. And I sort of looked at him, you know, like he was talking about UFOs. Like, yeah, sure, ringtones will be big business.
Now they are. Bigger than CDs.
Yeah. Oh, it's billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And
what
I don't understand is some of the ringtones you like rent. You pay money and you can only have them on your phone for, you know, 120 days, 60 days.
You could educate me with this, Mike. Sometimes when you buy a phone, though, there's already a lot of ringtones in it, isn't there? And you can just choose what you want from what's in the phone.
Right.
But if they're not there, you have to go looking for them, right?
Right. And then, there's like, there's applications where you can, that you can buy to make your own ringtones out of your own CDs, like Zingtone is one of them.
Oh, really? I have noticed, have you ever noticed when you're in line something for a movie and somebody who is, has their phone very loud, the ringtone plays loud when they're getting called, and it's like they're really embarrassed about it.
they regret the choice they've made. The whole crowd just looks at them and goes, what a choice.
Her name is Lola. She was a show.
Not my phone.
And he looks like a wrestler. And look what he's listening to.
He's a wrestler. That's pretty funny.
That's true, though.
I've seen that many times.
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know what kind of statement they're saying. Like, hey, I don't get it.
It's quite funny. I think it's a good idea, the concept, because when everybody had cell phones and there was only the monophonic phones, ringtones, and there was only 10 of them that came in the average phones, everybody would hear one ring and everybody would go for their phone and there would only be one person getting the call. But now the opposite has happened, where everybody hears like music playing and then it was something in the background or it's somebody's phone. You know, it's like,
The other thing too, there's nothing more creatively rewarding than hearing a song that you worked on, you know, to make it sound like a beautiful audio file recording, to hear it reduced to like a four voice, you know, FM synthesizer coming out of a centimeter wide speaker, you know.
The other side of that is amazing. I mean, how good the some of the cell phones
they're
sound.
Getting, that's true. Now
they're
getting
better. Much better low frequency. Much better sounding. Really.
Well, like the 6700, you know, where you don't have to buy a ringtone, you can basically play any WAV file. Mm-hmm. It sounds pretty good.
It sounds fine.
How does the iPhone sound, Mike?
There are no custom ringtones for the iPhone yet.
Is that right?
Really?
You know why?
But it'll happen because it.
You think?
Logic Pro. The new Logic Pro is coming out. Be able to do it directly to your iPhone. New Logic Pro.
Really?
You're going to get sequencing together too at the same time. Let's have a look at it.
Can't you just do MP3s? Oh.
No, well, not as ringtones yet. But if you surf some of the Mac sites, there, you know, that it's going to be built into iTunes, so you'll be able to purchase ringtones and all that. So one of the things I wanted to say about the iPhone, since I've lived with it for a little while now, is it's amazing how they've kind of incorporated all your tasks into a little box where I don't need my computer to like check my email. I don't need my computer to like surf the web. And as I was doing this, I was thinking, you know, as soon as they open up the development for the iPhone or iPhone part two, you're going to see some pretty cool little audio applications, I think, coming down the pipe, you know, whether it's going to be sequencers or whether it's going to be MIDI. Because I know for the 6700, they already have little music sequencers and things like that. And I think you're really going to see a paradigm change on just being creative out on the road and being creative wherever you are. We thought it was a blessing when you can take a notebook and you can go to a hotel and write. But now, what if you don't even need that notebook? What if you can just, you know, Bluetooth in a keyboard and you have a little tone generator on your phone, and next thing you know it, you're composing in a small little platform. So
you're counting on Apple to open the architecture of the iPhone?
Well, I'm counting on hackers, actually.
Okay, well.
and it may not be the iPhone, but it's definitely, you know, you can see a paradigm shift. Last Friday, I had to take my Mac in, and so I went...
That broke down too, didn't it?
Come on. Wow. Sense of theme here. No, the Mac did not break down, although it did develop a display problem, but it did not break down.
Okay, carry on.
but I went the whole day and I, with all my emails and surfed all the sites that I needed to, with the phone. And I just thought it was pretty phenomenal. It's not that it does anything new per se, is that it does the interface is just so, it's so friendly. It's so easy to do. And I just think it's exciting to see technology moving that way. Cause you know, other companies are going to do the same thing on different platforms.
Or have already done it.
Yeah.
Like this P910 here from Sony Ericsson that in Europe does exactly that. Opens up Word documents, Excel, PDFs, email, internet. And has done for 3 years. This is an old phone. Three years.
You know what? That's actually, but you're right though. Europe and a lot of countries are way more advanced in their, network speeds. Because I will tell you that the edge network is just so slow. It really is slow.
Did you find that, Bobby? Because Bobby was in England recently. Did you find that you thought the technology was well ahead than here?
I've always noticed it just, you know, obviously because US is such a big country, it's very hard for it to change its protocol and whatever, but certainly with cell phones anyway. Everybody, of course, has a cell phone, as everyone does here, but WAP was a very popular format many years ago, wireless-enabled phones, basically, and internet phones. And now everybody's just surfing and doing their thing, BlackBerrying and all over the place. And whereas here, it's not as popular just yet. But the other difference, very big difference, is it's more expensive over there, so everybody's much better because of the commerce in texting, you know, typing. So they're very good at it. You know, they've done because we're here, it's not so bad. So we just call each other.
So when you arrived in London, you noticed instantly that the technology was advanced.
Completely. Yeah. I mean,
no. By the levitating cars going down the road. Well, I don't think anything that Apple did on the iPhone is brand new per se, other than the way you use it. The fact that you can, you know, you only have one button and you can get around with your fingers and just the interface. It's just, I think it's just really exciting. I think
there's a king for that. Yeah. The interface is always
There's some great stuff coming down and it's just going to be, you're going to see slowly but surely, you know, the paradigm of how we control things. Even with music, you know, if you look at some of the alternative controllers out there, like the Lemur and some of the other ones where you use a touchpad and you can you don't need to have any knobs and you can just touch this little pad. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Lemur. Are you familiar with the Lemur?
No.
It's a little video $3,000 touchpad that's basically, 22 inches wide, I think?
Yeah, I don't...
With different colors and you can...
Very nice colors.
Beautiful colors, yeah.
And it's... But you can do things with control now that like you can have velocity. So like when you raise a parameter up, it's not just... You know, the fact that you're raising it up, it's how fast you're raising it up. And you can adjust velocity and elasticity and things like that. So when one parameter changes to another, it doesn't necessarily have to go, you know, just like that. It can ease in or ease out at different.
Is it just a controller or it has some processing?
No, it's a controller. And then it works with a bunch of different soft synths.
And you can link as well. You have the ability to link and negative link. So if you go up in this one will go down. And if this one goes this way, if you go really fast, this one will go slowly this way.
And it's $3,000.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's expensive.
And it's not instant either, I've heard. Everybody says it's like a bit latent.
I mean, I'll check it out. I have a studio just floor to ceiling with what was supposed to be the miraculous new controller over the years. everything from guitar strummers to every kind of touchpad you can imagine. I mean, every now and then something was cool, but...
I've just built my own controller, my own little hardware. Can I show you?
Yeah, that thing was
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a 32.
Yeah, I saw it too. It's
great. Yeah, it's sweet. It's just for controlling. I've written a little script for Kontakt too. I don't know if you guys are into native instrument stuff.
Very cool.
It's kind of cool. It gives me...
And let Kontakt do the work. I mean, that's smart. You have such a great scripting language there. You may as well use it.
And you can do anything. You just... on the fly, and it's all programmable and recordable.
See that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I showed you.
Yeah. The Summerfield 3000.
It's called Controller. How very original.
Oh, very nice.
With a K, of course.
Of course.
Available at a music store. So that's my iPhone experience, and I will not keep you
updated. Pass it around. Let's have a look. Well, come on.
Don't let you touch it.
No,
Bobby. You can't get near it. Don't even look at it. Don't look at it.
I will
can hear the sustain.
I will pass it around after the podcast.
It's all right, Mike. You hold on to it.
Because my notes for the podcast are on it right now.
That's amazing. Sure. It's great you're using it like that.
No, it's great because, I was riding the train into work the other day and I was just tapping out and I put all my notes down for the podcast.
You're a good person to ask because I know you're good. Mike's a good cross-platform person, Mac and PC. He's pretty fair and he's pretty balanced in his
he's the
views.
Fox News of computer users.
I would say. On a scale of 1 to 10, happy being 10, 1 being unhappy, how are you with the iPhone? What do you think?
Realistically, right now, I'm at a 7, I would say. So
a little disappointed. Huh?
I think they could do things to get me a little higher as far as with better support for like Flash plugin. And I can crash it. I can crash Safari really, really easy by going to certain sites. So there's definitely some room for improvement, but it's better than, in cell phones in general. My last cell phone.
That's good to know that.
So cell phones.
So it's a lot better than anything out there you've had.
That I've had as far as usability. I mean, I couldn't replace it with my other cell phones because just it would be, like a browser. The internet is really cool. If it wasn't for the fact that Safari crashed all the time. I mean, I can stream the Audio Nowcast on the phone. It was really cool. So.
That's amazing.
That kind of stuff is kind of fun. But they definitely, it's software based, so we'll see how that.
And they've got to get the network faster.
Oh, it's
That's the main reason I don't have one. That's a showstopper.
Yeah, no, it really is, especially because of technology, because exactly like, Urban was saying, you go over to Europe and they're flying on their networks, and you go to Korea or Japan and they're flying on their networks. And
it's interesting if you look at another cell phone manufacturer like Sony Ericsson that has their own network in terms of music too in Europe. It's not available in the U.S. You can't even go online and check it out. It's called MBuzz, and in the rest of the world, if you have a Sony Walkman phone, you can check out music and new music right on your screen and go to this any website. But you can go to the website, download the music straight into your phone from anywhere.
Whose service is it? Who provides the service?
Sony Ericsson has made deals with certain I don't know which exactly they are, but certain.
It's their own iTunes kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah. And it works with all the Walkman phones that you get, because Walkman is obviously a Sony brand.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool part is that they're catering to independent artists, and that's where I wanted to get with this, is that as an independent artist, you can actually contact them, and if they like your stuff, they will actually give you the chance of reaching millions of people, and they feature 10 artists per month.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
And that's a great opportunity. And they specifically search out independent artists.
See, I think that's that's a great point as far as how cell phones, they're no longer just a cell phone. It's almost like a communication hub because you'll be able to buy your music. You'll be able to buy, your movies, your television. I think that's one of the things that really buzzes me about something like the iPhone is the fact that it's more than just a phone because, it's also a great iPod too. But when they link something like that up to the network, like Urban was saying that they have over in Europe, where you could download your songs, if you're bored or whatever and you want to just find out what's out there from some independent artist or something like that. I mean, it's going to open up some markets for independent.
Here's
musicians.
A question I wanted to ask you, Mike. Sure. I was asking you about this before. It's, you can get onto YouTube on your iPhone, but it's not the YouTube that we all see, is it? It's a YouTube that is a little bit,
Yeah, it's
different.
Not, it's not the Flash based YouTube because they, it doesn't play Flash movies. So they're, I don't know what the process is, but I do know that their YouTube isn't like the full YouTube that we can index and look. And the reason why I know this is I did a couple searches for some videos that I know are out on YouTube. Well, like, mm-hmm. you know, in the House of Stone and Light,
yeah.
you know, I did a search for that and I couldn't find that and a couple other things. And so they have their own YouTube videos that have been, formatted for the iPhone, but it's not the
and that's very yeah. deceptive marketing because they point
Absolutely.
Out
yeah,
they well do. They point out in their commercials it's not a reduced version of the web, it's just the web,
yeah.
you know, it's
well,
just it the internet
and it doesn't support Java either,
yeah,
yeah, big problem.
So you cannot watch MySpace
mm-hmm.
yes. or listen right. to music on MySpace. That's
kind of true.
Yeah.
I mean, it could potentially eventually do those things, but that's why I think iPhone 2 is going to be so cool.
Yeah, or just the next update, you know, and if you're out there and you're wondering whether you should get an iPhone right now, I would wait till the next to an update, the software
And
update.
If you're a trader, I'd go short Apple at about 132 right here and get about 10 bucks down on the down.
No way. Apple hit 200. You watch. But, all right. Well, that's enough iPhone talk. But, it's definitely going to be some great opportunities for musicians and for songwriters in the future. I want to change the subject really quick to a conversation that, I got dragged into, and it was about archiving. And I wanted to run something by you guys. We have talked about it on the podcast before about how to archive for the long run, because there's a lot of data out there and people, you know, I have data on SideQuest discs that I couldn't.
Me too.
I couldn't
44
play.
And 250s.
I mean, I know, Martin, you've got data on SideQuest discs.
That's, have I?
He's got data on lithograms. He's got the old drums.
No, that's, well, maybe I shouldn't tell him because then he'll panic.
Yeah, if but, your data is stored in paintings, you know, you've been doing it a long
tell
time.
Tell me about no, this, but, Mike. Tell me.
Your tour.
Oh, okay.
In the House of Stone and Light
of
tour.
Of course. Yeah. Of yeah. course.
All the really important files.
Well, I have to put that down to you, Mark, I guess, because yeah. you had the vision to do that.
Well,
I don't know what you're talking about.
The blurred vision.
No, but it worked great while we were on the road, and luckily we have a couple drives, so one of them will work. But but we started talking about how to archive things, and I was listening to radio. I was actually listening to Leo Laporte. I don't know if you mm-hmm. listened to
the
him.
Tech guy.
The tech guy. And they advertise a company called Carbonite.com mm-hmm. and their offsite data storage. And what you can do is you pay $50 and you can upload as much data as you want and you pay $50 a year. And I think that is going to be the future of data storage. I think people are going to, if you want to have it last for the long run.
So it's like putting your furniture into storage.
Exactly. Right? Because you can upload as much as you want. But the thing is you put the responsibility on them to keep up with technology, mm-hmm. to keep up with the different formats, whether it's going to be an optical or hard drive or hologram or whatever. And I just wanted to, you know, bring that out to the table. What do you guys think? To me, that sounds like a really great way to start archiving things is to do it on an offsite system like that. It's not free, but still, it beats the price of hard drives.
It's still pretty cheap. I mean, an offsite backup is always important to have, but there's always going to be, if it's real sensitive data, there are always going to be security concerns. And they can say it's the most secure system in the world, which they do. They do say that, and everything's the most secure system until it isn't, you know, until somebody gets around it or somebody takes a laptop home that happens to have your data on it or whatever. For most data, it's probably fine, but for really sensitive stuff, you know, like with Stevie's data over the years, we've backed the stuff up extensively. I can't imagine him ever agreeing to just hand it to some offsite company where it's going to live, the data's going to live on a server along with a bunch of other people's data. You know, maybe it's secure now. What happens 10 years, 20 years from now, whenever it is, security, it's a real concern. I mean,
well, what about just an offsite, you know, his mixed master already? You know, what if you just wanted to keep a 24-bit mixed master and just keep it on the offsite, just on the odd chance that, you know,
right,
something-
but offsite, not just, I'm not just talking about Stevie, but offsite to people who are, like doing high level, you know, secure work, offsite means tapes or discs that are in a vault someplace. Something that's more secure than just sitting on somebody's server, accessible via the internet.
Well, you know, I guess
anything on the internet is vulnerable at some level.
Yeah, I would guess that I would be talking about when you're archiving stuff, it's stuff that's, you know, if you're a songwriter, like, you know, it'd be like maybe for Martin, it'd be, you know, a couple of his masters, 24 track files, you know, they've already been released and he just wants to have a copy of it somewhere.
Well, and you can do that. You can do your own offsite backup that is not shared with everybody else's offsite backup. That's all I'm saying.
But then you're still going to put it on some type of media. And then see, that's the thing to me is, you know, how do we know these DVDs or the CDs and everything we're doing now are going to be
relevant? How do you know Carbonite's going to be in business in 5 years? Well, no, you don't know any of this stuff.
Well, no, that's true too.
There's another problem, and that is obviously upload speed.
Yeah.
Okay. For my sessions, 12 gigs. No, it'll take 3 weeks to get it up.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. Well, I would. Like I said, I wouldn't do it. It's. I think you'd have to have it. You know, your own backup system as far as your most immediate backup needs, which you do every day, whether you burn DVDs. But I'm talking about archiving. I'm talking about taking the stuff that you just want to have around for a while. Yeah, burn it on a CD, a DVD. But I think you wouldn't, you know, a service like Carbonite, maybe not that one, but one like that. I think that's going to be...
It's one option, but the truth is the way a lot of artists are backing their stuff up now, the real high-end artists are backing their stuff up on a really high-quality 2-inch 24 track, because there are so many tapes out there that those are going to be playable. Someone's going to have a machine for a long time. But what a lot of artists are doing is they'll back up in the best analog format they can find and one or two of the best digital formats. They'll generally back up in Pro Tools, going through the best converters they can, because right now that's the most popular system and chances are it's going to be playable for a while.
Right.
And then often they'll back up in some alternate digital system, whether it's a DSD-based or some other digital thing that isn't Pro Tools. And then they will also have archive machines. They will actually take a 2-inch 24-track machine, they'll take a Pro Tools rig, and they'll take a third recording device and archive those along with all of the data and have people who over the years will maintain this stuff. If you want to talk about a true archive, the only way you can archive audio data is to kind of archive the technology that can play them, because you're not guaranteed of anything being able to play in the future.
That's true.
So for real high-end people, they're actually archiving the machines and the data at facilities that are secure with people whose job it is to maintain the technology. The stuff I'm talking about is something where the artist needs to really be able to control the whole archiving,
right,
and know what it's going to be safely in the future. With a company like Carbonite, there are still a lot of variables. I think for most people's day-to-day data, it's great because, you know, upload speeds, as long as you're not trying to upload gigabytes of stuff every day.
Well, it runs in the background, so it's, you know, it's...
But it's still going to slow your machine down.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who says it runs in the background, so... it doesn't impact your work is not really...
That's what nighttime's for.
Nighttime. Well, that's a time we work when the sun isn't up.
That's exactly right.
But I have to be conscious of the security stuff, because different artists that I've actually dealt with archiving issues for, no one wants their data stored with anybody else's data.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. And then when you're working in with some of the sensitive stuff that you're working with, yeah, I can understand
but
that.
But I think most people would consider their own financial data as pretty sensitive too.
Yeah. Well, Bobby, what's your plan at your place?
I still do DVDs for local, and I have a local server that I back up my stuff to, and I have my friend and I I'll back up stuff to his website just to keep it off site, and he does it to mine, and then also I stuff up on my FTP with Earthlink. Okay. But that's only small files. It's really only small files. Majority of the stuff I buy, $189 300 gig hard drives, 5200 RPM, and I just have a little USB IDE connector, which is literally, I don't even, the power supply is separate. I don't have a box or anything for it. And I just write the date on it and say, bang, back it up, do another copy of it, bang, and that's it. I do 300 gigs at a pop.
Wow.
And it's a bit stupid, but that's about the best way I can do it. I don't know any other way of doing it. Actually, it's a good question for you guys. On a Windows-based machine, anybody got a good mirror image application that actually takes the whole system and everything, goes, that's it, and bit for bit copies it?
Norton Ghost was
I've got Norton Ghost
popular.
10.
I'm partition. What's it called? Drive Image Pro.
Image Drive Pro.
Drive Image. That was pretty good. I've done that. I've used that.
I've got that on 2 floppy disks still, but that's
there are newer versions. Yeah. One thing I will say, a lot of people, because of the convenience, I mean, you're smart to have DVDs as well as the hard drives. One thing that a lot of people don't realize is, anything you archive to a hard disk, it's great because you can always, for a while, you can always plug that drive in and use it right on that drive. You don't have to do a restore procedure because it's on a hard drive that can just play it. But hard drives, unless they're used fairly often, eventually will just seize up. They'll fail mechanically. And so if you're doing long-term storage of a hard drive, if you take a hard drive and pack it away for 10, 15 years, it's a coin toss whether or not it's going to spin up at the end of that period.
Sounds like one of the best things you keep on coming up with is DVD anyway.
DVDs are great because they supposedly have a shelf life of like 100-plus years, which is great.
Well, and you know, it's important to say that DVD, not the new Blu-ray or HD DVD, because I've been reading that they've been finding some rot on some of those, the newer technology.
Already?
Yeah.
They're finding it out now, at least.
Yeah. Well, they don't know if it's that particular batch or that particular run or that particular manufacturer, but they do. That was a big thing on the net. Martin, do you have any concern as far as backing up all your stuff? I know you have tons of 2-inch tape and tons of...
You tend to look at, I think, myself, as I've moved into the world of Pro Tools, I started to bring all the old DAP masters out and transfer them across to Pro Tools, and then from the Pro Tools, put them onto DVD. You know, I still have tons and tons of 24-track reels, you know, in rooms hidden away. And I think for me, because over the years, you look at what's most important to you, look at what songs and what work is that you think it needs to last. But mainly it's been coming down and putting it onto Pro Tools and getting it across onto the... We're really from the DATs down to Pro Tools, then down to DVD, and the odd hard disk, which you've helped me with, Mike, you know. And for me personally, it's been about what you choose to archive, you know, not everything, because that is just a lot of work, but looking at over the years what seems more important. But just as you guys were saying, more about the simple for me, more the DVD and Pro Tools.
For your 24-track tapes, your analog tape stuff,
yeah.
Obviously, depending on the way they're stored, as we all remember, the good old print through from towels out stuff, but after a 15, 20 years, it will start to get a bit. Start to get a bit tacky.
Yeah,
you can start to get the oxide. It starts.
Yeah,
you have to get them.
And looking at the temperatures of the rooms, particularly here in California,
getting toasty.
Yeah,
I did. Once sidebar talking of which, but I got a job to mix the Jackson 5 for the 25th anniversary. It was pretty cool, but all the tapes that they got from the archives and they were. The guy from Watchcourt was going through the tracks, which ones to mix. We couldn't play them for long because the heads on the tape machines were 16 tracks. They would get caked up with oxide. So we said, we can't play it anymore. We've got to take it off. And they bake it in this little baking oven in this place somewhere. And then we'd convert it to 24-track digital.
Wow.
Or 48-track digital.
Wow.
And that's what happens. You should look after it.
Yeah.
There was a certain time period of tapes that needed the baking. It was
73s.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, it was just a period of time. If you have tapes that are older than that or newer than that, you're probably fine. But
wow. Urban, do you have a strategy to back up all the stuff you worked on music-wise?
I buy bigger drives and transfer all the stuff that's older than 3 years onto new drives roughly every 2 to 3 years. I have so much storage.
So you end up with lots and lots of copies of the same thing, which is good.
Yeah.
It's good redundancy.
I keep, even if the old ones used to be ID drives and now they've become SATA drives. Mm-hmm. And what I've done lately now, I've bought trays that I stick SATA drives in, which are hot swappable, which is great. And I use that now 500 gigs and I transfer everything that I can or will think that I have used for the last 2 years at least are on the drives that are spinning every day. And then, you know, I leave the stuff on, and then as I move on, I just keep copying it over. That's what I've done.
Wow.
So I don't keep DVDs really around, CDs. Although I have old ones that are more than 10 years now, and they still work fine.
Mm-hmm.
So
the trick with hard drives, I mean, hard drives do have a total run life. So if they're on all the time, eventually they'll fail. But if they're not on all the time, but occasionally started just to keep the lubrication from seizing up, they can last a really, really, really long time. The mistake that a lot of people make is they think they can box up the hard drive, put it on a shelf, and that 50 years from now, that'll be a playable archive, and it won't be.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're going to take a break right now, and when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about talent and knowing one's limitations, and when's it time to let reality hit you in the face, or when's it time to make plans. So we'll see you on the other side.
Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about archiving. And actually, Ken, the engineer for the Audio Nowcast, actually brought up a really good point about flash drive and flash media. What do you guys think about that? That solid state media. You think that's going to be a viable storage?
I'd have to see how long it's supposed to actually last. I like that it doesn't have a battery. So,
yeah.
Because anything with a battery obviously is going to fail eventually.
Isn't it going to be very expensive too?
Well, it's coming down. Everything is coming down in price.
Yeah. It. You know, every few months it doubles in size. It seems like so.
I'm a little worried about flash drives and things like that because, you know, my first shoot was, actually with Martin doing some interviews and we did solid state drives.
Mm-hmm.
And, I will have to admit, I was a little nervous, not having tape, but it's worked out.
Well, cause all it takes is bzzz and it's gone. You know?
And that's, at least with tape, you got something.
You got something. Well, if the tape breaks, you can splice it and there might be something after it, but after bzzz, there's just nothing.
That's so true. It's so true. And the fact that, you know, we had to re-record over the cards because we had to dump it off onto a hard drive, and it's just like, did we dump that off to the hard drive? And you know, it was a little hairy, but it worked out okay. And we got really great results. So, and I didn't have to digitize. So that was a really, really cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring something up with you guys. And it's pretty appropriate, especially if you know a little bit about urban story. But, I was thinking about talent, and we all have our different, you know, talents and strengths. And I was thinking about the path that everybody's taken to go to where they've been. And I wanted to ask you guys, has there ever been a time in your life where you wanted to go one direction and you realized that you had or you didn't have the talent or the skills to go that direction and you turned left and did something else? And it seems to me, I get people all the time talking to me and wanting to hear their music or wanting to, you know, hey, give me an honest critique of what I'm doing. And I'm not trying to, you know, sound like an egomaniac or anything by saying this, but some of this stuff is pretty awful. And you look at that and you're thinking, dude, you are so talented over here. Why are you wasting your time trying to do this over there? And I just wanted to bring it to a table. When do you let reality kind of help you make your decision, you know? And a really good example is, Urban, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story about how you've been able to, not because of lack of talent, but because of opportunity, take your career in some different places.
Well, starting out as a musician, coming to LA and trying to make it as a, you know, with a band, it's kind of obvious you have to make money somehow. So, you know, for me, it was, I used to have a studio back in Sweden where I did commercials for radio and stuff like that. So when I came here, I figured, okay, there's got to be other ways to do it. And I just happened to have a friend that was, you know, into the TV and film industry. And I just started working whatever job I could to support, you know, doing music with a band. And at some point, you know, I found myself working on The Matrix. And, you know, I didn't intend to really do it, but I couldn't really pass it up because money's good. And then all of a sudden you meet people and then you find yourself back with, you know, what you wanted to do in the end anyways, because that's what happened to me and literally in the last 4 or 5 years. So
I guess maybe talent is the wrong word as far as opportunities. You know, it's, I don't know. I'm just trying to help people, you know, give some advice out there to people to be open to, I guess, to the opportunities. Let me give you an example. When I was younger, I played the drums and I wanted to be a drummer and I wanted to be in a band and I wanted to tour and I played the drums but I got to a point in my career where I knew I wasn't going to be good enough to be in a band. I knew either I didn't have that dedication or I just didn't have the skills to be in a band. So I stopped trying to be in the band. And I was in a couple local bands and we played around Orange County and things like that, but I knew I just wasn't going to break through. And I opened up to the backline gig and I said, okay, if I can't be in the band, I'm going to be a tech. And I opened up, you know, myself and faced reality that, hey, I'm no longer going to make it here this way. But guess what? Next thing I knew it, I got a gig as a drum tech, and it just kind of spiraled in. I started getting other gigs and other gigs, and I started working with Stevie Wonder, and I met Martin, and basically my whole career, you know, with mixing and what I'm doing now and in Westwave is because I didn't stay stubborn and I didn't hold on to that thing of, you know, I'm going to be a drummer and I want to be a band at all costs. And I'm sure all of you guys have either had friends that you know.
I think that what people need to realize, anybody who wants to do anything in entertainment has to realize that any job you can have in the entertainment business has its own clock that's ticking at its own rate. If you're trying to be, you know, a lead singer of a band, let's say you're trying to be a lead singer of Menudo, well, that clock's going to tick for like 2 years. You got a chance to do that and it's gone. If you want to be an actress who plays, you know, teenage kind of roles, that clock's going to tick. You're going to have maybe 4 or 5 years to be able to do that. If you want to be a solo artist, that clock ticks longer because there's a wider range of jobs that fit that description. And I think you have to have a realistic view of what your window of opportunity is. And if nothing has happened within whatever the window is for what it is you're trying to do, find an alternative.
That's a great thing. Number one, I guess, would be realize what the window of opportunity is for whatever you want to do.
That's, a lot of people have unrealistic expectations about that.
That's a great thing. I mean, what would be another key to look for if you're trying to decide whether or not this is the right direction for you?
Well, one of the hardest things is the universe gives you clues about whether you're good at something or not. You know, if you keep going out for auditions as an actor for a commercial, say, and you never land anything, and you do it for like 10, 15 years. I've met plenty of actors who then just still keep going, and they figure, well, it's everybody else's problem, you know, that the world just hasn't discovered them yet. And maybe in a tiny fraction of the cases, they might be right, but usually they're not. Usually, if nothing is happening, if you've been truly writing your heart out in songs, and you've been writing and writing and writing, and you're turning out songs as fast as you can, and it's your passion. And if after, you know, 10, 15 years of that, you can't get anyone interested in doing anything with your music, and your family may tell you you're a genius, and they may tell you, your friends may say they love your music, but if you're not making any traction in the industry, you need to take a real look at yourself to see maybe that's just not what you should be doing.
Martin, I'm sure you've, you know, talked to a lot of songwriters and you've met people out there that you know, maybe at some of your clinics, and you listen to their stuff and they have the great heart, but they don't have the talent. I mean, what kind of signals, what kind of advice would you give to somebody like, yeah, this will work, or no, it's not going to work? Or do we even say that? Do we just, you know?
It's a very tough question because it's a very hard question to answer, because passion comes into this, and your desires of what's naturally inside you comes into a lot of writers and performers. And you never, and this world's a strange place. Some people you can say, I would have never have thought they would have done what they've done.
Well, that's true.
You know, I wouldn't have rated that, and yet it's within a year they've got a hit record. So it's very, very hard to make definitive decisions on people. Yeah, I do a lot of clinics and I listen to a lot of songs. And we try to encourage. And the biggest thing I will look for is passion. For instance, if, you know, when I started, I wanted to be a bass player. And I tried my darndest to learn as much as I could by listening to my heroes. And then you sort of realize that from your own instinct, if you're lucky, that Jaco Pastorius and Stanley Clarke are exceptional and you're not possibly going to reach there. And you just, but that's led you towards listening to records. That leads you to looking at what producers do. That leads you other areas, but still in your passion. Like you were saying, you played drums, but you ended up, you know, realizing that it's the branches have worked into a different way. Yet you're still touching rhythm, and you're still touching art.
I'm still playing drums, and I'm actually a better drummer now than I was back then, only because I've been around so many great drummers.
I think it's just one of those questions where you can't put black and white against it. Yet I think for my own personal career, as the passion drove me, and because your instinct is so pure that you want to do it, you tend to answer your own questions quite a bit. You start to realize that you are good at this, not so good at that. Strong here, not so good at that. Because other people working around you that aren't just your family, but are professionals, tend to influence you and inspire you. But after everything we're saying here, I think just to counter what Rob's saying, which I think is totally right, is that also you must allow passion to to see it through, because sometimes things you, people you think aren't going to do it, surprise you.
I've actually encountered people who have been writing songs the same length of time that you have, and in that length of time when you've sold lots of songs, they've yet to sell a song, and they still have passion for it. Mm-hmm. Now, luckily, these people that I've met have, they have other careers too. They they're not still saying, this is all I'm going to do in life. But, you know, they still have an unrealistic idea of what their talent is. Obviously, in all this time, if they haven't ever sold a single song, that's what
I do the clinics, is because you can sit down with somebody and say, you know, your strength isn't the melody here, or you do understand that it would be great to have a bridge here, or go and listen to a certain artist and study Stevie Wonder, study Carole King. And that's helpful. And hopefully, you hope that that person's passion gets rounded off, and you hope that that person says, you know what, I should, I'm a better singer than I'm a writer, or I'm a better guitarist than I am a producer. You hope that that takes place. It's a, it's a hard question, because the passion has to meet with reality at a certain point.
I think Rodney Dangerfield said it best in Caddyshack. The world needs ditch diggers too.
Well, such a pessimistic point of view.
Well, I don't want to make it even. I want to make it even a little more touchier. When somebody comes up to you and either plays you a song or plays their instrument or asks for your opinion, are you honest or do you?
I just have them removed.
Carried out by the bouncers.
Right, exactly. People who deal with that.
I think I tend to try and tell myself to be strong, tough love, you know, but still, I'm still overawed by somebody's passion to have a go at it, you know, so I don't want to knock them down totally and say, you know, it's a waste of time you being here. You need encouragement, but it has to be tough love. It has to be say, you know, you're missing by a mile here, but there's something good about this. Usually in most things, there's something you can say that, you know, you did walk into the room with a guitar strapped on.
That's a good sign. Great sunglasses. Yes.
You know what? I've been kidding around tonight, but the truth is, when I'm encountering someone who's bringing me material to hear or whatever, I have a really hard time giving them honest, bad feedback if I'm not liking what they're doing.
Right.
And honestly, for anybody who wants real feedback, if you just don't want to be told you're a genius, but you actually want to get real feedback from someone, you should not be there when they're listening to your material. Anybody who wants to play you the stuff and be in the room with you, they're not going to get a you know, unless you're a total jerk, they're not going to get a realistic assessment of what you think of the music. If I'm sitting there listening to somebody's music, even if I hate it, I feel the need to be nice. I don't want to be mean about it.
Right.
It's the thing, though, isn't it? There is a tough love. I mean, they are there also to want to be told.
You know what? Some people, though, really are there because they want the truth, and others just want to hear that they're doing well, you know?
But you can also ask them, why do you want my opinion about it?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because the point is, it's so easy to rip something apart and not take the time. And sometimes I've actually been in a position where you listen to something, you don't necessarily like it, or you're not there emotionally that day, and then you come back to it two weeks later and you go, wait a minute, that's pretty cool, that's different, it's interesting, and maybe if you do this with it, you know, then maybe it will actually, you know, take a turn for the better. And if you have the opportunity to give somebody maybe some advice and a little bit of encouragement, maybe it will actually do something good.
That's a very good point. When we do the ASCAP thing, so the people that come to have their songs checked and judged on and given advice, they choose from a bunch of writers and producers that they want to go to. I mean, the last one I did, there was like six people that specifically wanted me to listen to their stuff because they liked the stuff I did, or they felt their music was relative to mine, and other people would go to different people, you know, R&B people or whatever. And I think that's a really good point, because the feedback you'll be getting is from people that you want to hear from, because you get something from them. You know?
And there's already respect there.
Yes. And I think that's a good focus to think about for people that do want to get judgment. They should be thinking, let's get our judgment from people that we respect. Same way as when a band is looking for a record deal, they have to choose the kind of label that wants to, you know, sign those kinds of bands. And I think when people are looking for feedback, they should look for that, you know, the same way.
Do you find, though, that you'll give somebody the same feedback? If someone were to give you a song to listen to on your own time, or if they want to sit there and actually play the guitar and sing you their song, I mean, you're human. You can't give them the same feedback. You know, once you're in that room with them and they're playing guitar and singing, it's very hard to give the same negative feedback if you hate the song that you'd be able to give if they just gave you a CD and you were listening to it.
I would think if
separate.
They were sat there trying to sing to you that they were doing something brave. That would be my first aspect, is that they're
no,
trying to
right.
sing.
No, you're right. I admire
so
that.
So I would go there, but I would still try and think, like, well, why am I sat here at this point in my career at my age if I can't give them something which is real, you know? But at the same time, I would try and look up. My first thoughts were, he's come into the room, he's got a guitar, mm-hmm. He's brave enough to play it. And let's give that, that's, you know, 10 on the scale for that. And, but I certainly won't want to knock him out of his chair and say, you know, that's just a waste of time, mate. You know, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be trying that. I don't think that's useful, but I should think I should be able to communicate to him after all these years that there are some problems and some areas that he should work on, you know? So. I think it's a medium ground. I mean, I've learned that over a number of years because I've been asked to do it. And I think if it's in the middle, the temperate place, the Buddhist place, the middle way, try and look for the good things and the bad things and, you know, just fire it out as what it is, real. You know, and if you don't think the person has any talent at all in that area, you've got to find a way to just say you're brave to come in. But have you thought about, you know,
Amway.
Yeah, that may be my favorite faint praise is you're brave to come in.
Start on that one roll.
Yeah. I love that. Well, you're brave to call that a song.
Hey, Bobby, I know you've done some work with some budding artists and things like that.
Yeah. I would say the key to it is remembering that art and music, and this we're talking about, is subjective. So. One, you really do have to be in the same land that you're talking about. So if somebody came to me and was an opera singer and sang really well or badly, I wouldn't know the difference. So I think that's a very important thing. And also, you know, I could listen to the radio right now and 99% of the stuff on there, I'd say that's not very good and go off and off and off. But if they'd come and play that to me, I would have said that and they would have walked out the door and they would have gone and had $1 million hit with somebody else. So really do have to marry that. So having said that out the way, I think the core thing about it is that the question you asked is when kind of sort of do you really have to pack it in and realize, okay, I've got to get a day job here nearly, you know.
Right.
You know, It's for a true artist, from let's just say songwriting point of view, because arts, you know, could be acting or any style, of course. But you know, it's got to be driven from your core that it drives you so much that you just know that you're going to make it. And there are a lot of people like that can't eat. They've got no food. I mean, they're basically, they're just doing anything to make a penny here to work on their art. I think you have to let people do that. And I think they really do have to keep going until they fall on their face, until they really cannot go any further. Because there's so many success stories where people come up to the precipice and literally have an interview the next day and then they get signed and they're number one next week. And the Beatles got turned down 56 times. I mean, you know, so many brilliant people have been told no at the wrong time or have given up at the wrong time. So, I would say I'm a stubborn person like that. I'd say keep banging your head at it and go for it. If you're 99, go for it, because you can still write a great song.
And one of those things that I think that we've all said here is that, you know, try and get feedback from people you respect.
And you're
absolutely
worthy.
Yeah.
And then they're in your field. But, and talking to that, I think it's essential that you all, if somebody respects you enough and puts their heart out on the floor for you to stamp on, respectfully, you should stamp on it with soft shoes, you know, at least they don't want to be, you know, okay, if I'm working with an artist and we all have, if you're going to produce somebody, it's like a marriage, you're going to have a relationship with that person. You can't set up a superficial communication from the get go. If they come in and say, what do you think of this? And they churn away at a chorus and you go, that's crap. What do you got to say? It's important, essential to be honest.
So
otherwise,
yes.
You're just going to sit there and produce a record with that person and not have any belief in it at all and not really contribute, and you're all sitting there wasting your time. You really all should go off and get a day job.
I think Bobby made one great point there as well, is when myself and my guy I was writing with when we first started, we went to all the publishers and we were turned down, and you've still got the letters that are saying, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, you know, it's not melodic and whatever. But for the real artists, they do tend to, or the people that are so driven, they tend to use that as ammunition
fuel.
And fuel to go on and to push even harder. So I think that's also something that we should be aware of. It can inspire you to dig deeper.
Absolutely.
And go on.
And it does, you can look at it and go, this is a brilliant song, and it may well be or may not, whatever. But you do look at your wound, you lick your wounds, and you go off and go, let me just see how I can make this better or make it more palatable to the people that
you don't give in, do you?
You shouldn't get, you know, you shouldn't give in. But again, you quit playing drums, no disrespects, as I did, by the way, and piano, because I heard the Gino Vanelli album, and I said, bugger this, and threw my sticks up in the air and said, no, I can't play like this, I'm not going to do it. But you didn't have it. I didn't have it. You know, that's it. And the world does supply those that push-pull force for you if it comes easy for you, although it's a struggle to do. You should do it. You should definitely do it.
But it's not only about talent either. It's about making a living. At some point you just realize that, you know, you had two or three girlfriends walk out on you because you don't have enough money that you're bringing in, and
tell us about this, Urban.
Well, I've been fortunate, but
that's what they say. What do you call a musician without a girlfriend?
Homeless.
Exactly.
But seriously, I mean, at some point, even if you're passionate about what you're doing, there are so many things that you can do to sustain what it is that you're burning for. At some point, even if you don't want to work in a McDonald's, and that you don't have to go and do that. You can choose to work in other fields that will put you on track to do something that you may or may not love in the future, or may even bring you to meet people that you never thought you were going to meet and end up, you know, enabling yourself to do something that you wanted to do in the first place because you happen to meet people. And connections is everything, as we know. So even if you're the most talented songwriter in the world and you don't meet the right people, maybe you lack the social skills to get there as fast as other people do. And then you don't get there because of that. And that's also an aspect that I think, you know, especially if you move to a bigger city. I came from a small town in a different country, and you know, you come to LA and then you meet people and you think, oh, yes, that person is going to help out. And I certainly had multiple experiences with people that had track records of saying that they can do this and do absolutely diddly squat, no matter how hard you work. And they say, oh, I'm going to take it here and take it there. Nothing happens. You get stuck. You sign a contract with somebody. You can't go anywhere else. And you don't know better because you just get bad advice.
Right.
And you know what? That's your own doing, too. But you know, there are so many things that can go wrong and so many things that can go right. You know, you just have to figure out how you're going to get through it and get to where you want to be and do what you want to do.
That's a really great point. One thing I will point out is one thing that you can't do is I don't think you can buy your talent by the latest gizmo, the latest gadget, the latest software package. You know,
I think you can.
Well, you haven't listened to that.
I think you can. No, Antares and GarageBand, you on the radio, man.
iPhones.
Well,
it depends on the style of music you're talking
about.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't be the host of this podcast if you didn't have an iPhone. We wouldn't have let you do it.
No, but what I mean, listen. I stand by that because even if you buy that software, you're going to have a talent to know how to use it. But the whole music industry, and if you look at all the marketing, it's all like, hey, buy this piece of gear and it's going to make you the next superstar. And I don't think it's the gear. Even though people can use GarageBand, you know, if you buy GarageBand, that's not going to make you.
I think the gear is really responsible for 99% of the music on the radio right now. I really do.
But even, let's look at it. If it's loops, all right, you still have to be good enough to use those loops and to create your own beats and do the whole thing.
My cat walked across the keyboard and played a bunch of groovy loops. I'm thinking, that's it. But, done.
There's definitely a talent there. And if
there's a talent in your cat.
Yeah. He's a really, really smoking little
chicken. Can I hire him?
He's actually signed right now, 3-year contract. Someone's going to get him a deal.
But that's just it. It's the fact that people, they don't know how to recognize what talent is, because the talent isn't just buying the gear, the talent is using the gear. And that's what's fostering this whole mentality right now of everybody wants to be a musician and the bling and everything like that, is they think they can buy, you know, Ableton and they'll be a loop master, or they can buy, you know, Cubase and be a sequence master or something like that. And I just think even with those, you know, the virtual instruments and the VSTIs, there's still a talent to use in them.
I'll give you that, but let's just say from the talent of actually, you know, just 25 years ago, of actually knowing at least three chords on a guitar.
Absolutely.
And playing it sort of in time and sort of singing in time, because there wasn't that much correction. You could, okay, we would drop you in, but there wasn't that much fudging around they could do, to today's technology where 99% of it will do it for you. If you can make a noise with your voice, you can make it sound like a vocal, pretty much. I mean, I use Antares all the time. I sing. I suck. I did a demo, and I kept the demo vocal, and it was all Antares. It sounded fine. I'm not saying it's good, but I'm just saying, for those sorts of things, it really has made it a lot easier for people. I'm not taking that away. I think it's excellent.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think it's totally putting people in that vicious cycle of not knowing how to recognize where their strengths and their weaknesses are, and not being able to take advantage of opportunities. You know, I can't tell you how many people I met on the road in my career, and, you know, people that, well, I'd never, you know, be backline because I want to be a rock star, you know? Basically, it was that mentality. They wouldn't work for anybody else because they want to be in the band.
Right.
You know, meanwhile, you know, I'm, you know, flying all over the world, and they're still trying to break out of the,
But once you make the decision that this is something I will now stop pursuing, that's off the table for you. It's like you can't win the lottery if you don't buy at least one ticket. If they don't keep trying to be that rock star, then they know for 100% it's not going to happen.
That's a good point. There should
be a limited time.
Unless you decide that you're going to do this because I'm going to get here by way of going this way instead. You're not going in a straight line, which is a possibility.
Be the drum tech and murder the drummer.
Yeah, he's absolutely right, because now that I'm on the backside, you know, I don't want to be a rock star or anything like that, but I want to work on my own album. I've got music that I've done. You know, I've Martin's helped me with a couple tunes, and it's just like now I'm in a better space to create music. And with technology the way it is with MySpace, and you know, I can see, hey, yeah, I'll be able to put out an album, and I'll be able to do stuff. And I think Urban's right. It's like you just have to be open to the opportunities, because you never know when you're going to be able to hit it. Now, true, I'm not going to be a drummer, you know, for any rock band, you know, but it's things change, and you have to be open to those different opportunities, and you have to be open to the different ways where life takes
you. I know a keyboard tech from England that used to tech for a band that was signed to Virgin, friends of mine, and he's now the one calling them when he's in town with this major artist, and mm-hmm. he's playing guitar and keyboards in that band. So he got there by doing the side thing and meeting people. So, I mean, it happens. It's just like you're right, Rob, when you're saying that if you give it up and you decide to do this only.
But right. No, it sounds like in his case, it was a strategy.
That's what I mean.
That's
if you have
different.
The strategy of going, okay, I'm not going to get there right away. So if I get to meet the people and talk to them and they notice what I really can do and I get an opportunity to do that, then I'll get there.
But that person has to.
You have to do that.
Well, yeah, but also coming back to what I started with about the clock ticking and the window of opportunity. The window of opportunity to be a sideman, to be a keyboard player or a guitar player, is much longer.
Yeah.
There's much bigger window than if you want to be the lead singer of a band.
Well,
say.
That's true.
And
so,
with the lead singer, you know, with what labels are the public are looking for now, by the time you hit a certain age, it's a real uphill battle. You have to be so incredibly great and unique that it transcends, you know, what everybody's expecting age wise. So that's a real tight window of opportunity. I don't think there is such a thing as a side way into that. Either you're going to end up early 20s as the lead singer, or you're not.
Yeah.
And once that has passed, I mean, I've talked to so many singers and musicians who have been trying to do different things in the industry over the years, and I've met so many, especially singers, who just have no realistic expectation. I mean, they started in their early 20s, and it just didn't work out. And now they find themselves in their mid-30s. And rather than even trying to be doing what would be age appropriate for someone in their mid-30s, they're still trying for what they were originally trying for.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
and it obviously doesn't get any easier, but these are nice people. They have some talent. it could have happened for them in their early 20s. A lot of that is luck and what opportunities happen to pop up.
Yeah.
It didn't happen, and they have no realistic picture of
no,
this.
That's a really
and that's
good
a little
point.
Sad.
No, that's a good point you're making, because realistic expectations is...
But it's an unrealistic business. I mean, that's what it breeds.
No, that's true.
You know, I mean,
what? Well, it can happen for you if you're older. You just have to be that much more unique and that much better. I mean, I don't know why I keep coming back to Rodney Dangerfield. He didn't get big until his 50s.
Yeah. Well, you put on weight, you mean?
No. Popular. Because his act didn't work right, because you couldn't have a young man with that kind of attitude. It just didn't play right. I mean, he had mild success, but he just got...
That's
huge when he got older.
That's everything.
You know what? You could be the first 70-year-old who happens to sing some really crazy song that just totally changes the industry and puts it on its ear. And then every label's looking for a 70-year-old. You know, it's funny to laugh.
There's
at,
a couple
but,
of here tonight. Here
well, you know what? All it would take is someone to do it, and then all of a sudden everybody's going to be looking for the next...
Macarena.
The two dudes at Macarena. Macarena, exactly.
Well, and the other thing, too,
it
is...
It does happen.
I think technology with MySpace and with Facebook and with, you know, CD Baby, it's going to change the way... success is going to be defined. So I think there's definitely going to be opportunities that you wouldn't have had, 5 years ago, because you have such a great, channel to the consumer. So it's going to be really interesting. Well, you know, to wrap things up, I guess, if you're out there and you're wondering where to go, or you maybe been banging your head for 10 years and trying to figure out if you are going to be, you know, the next big thing, I guess if you take Rob's advice and you look at your window of opportunity in a really realistic way, and then we, you know, get some really good opinions from people that you respect, and then just be open to change, and I think you'll be able to define, you know, where along that path you should be going.
And keep in mind that family and friends are always going to be trying to make you feel good, and you're not. And that
not
that,
my family, that's for sure. They say that's crap.
Okay.
Next,
99% of family and friends. I have worked with so many new artists whose friends are telling them they're the greatest thing in the world. All you have to do is watch the beginning of any season of American Idol, where you hear the most terrible singers whose families all tell them they're incredible. You know, get the opinions of people you respect, and just know that family and friends, their primary goal is not to, you know, crush your spirit. They're not going to be giving you the most. Plus, who knows if they even know what they're talking about?
Yeah,
you know.
And I firmly do believe, though, that if you are a musician and you want to play music, even though you can't be the next big band or the next big vocalist, you shouldn't ever really throw in the towel, though, because you just never know, just for your own enjoyment, what,
absolutely,
you know, what music is going to give to you and what you're
passionate.
That's
a big thing, what you
it's
just
not
said
a decision.
There.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. If you love to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it feeds you and it really inspires you, well, then you just have to do it.
Right. You don't give up. Just be open for change, I guess.
Whether it's your career or not, if it's in you, you should be doing it. A lot of the real world stuff we were talking about today is if you're choosing that this is the way you're going to put food in your mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to be making a living doing this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hey, gang, we're going to be wrapping this up. And I just want to...
Did the iPhone crash while we were doing it?
No, the iPhone's been here the whole time.
Smoking a bit, though.
Yeah.
But I want to thank Urban for joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Is this the first Swedish gentleman we've had on the podcast? I think it is, isn't it?
Well, somebody? We don't know he's a gentleman.
Oh, okay.
Definitely a Swede, though.
Yes.
It's funny. I looked at my toolbox today. I looked at it. It said Swedish television, that little logo. Remember that little SVTV thing?
Oh, yeah.
Did they have Puck? Was that in Sweden, PUK? Or was that in PUK Studios? Book.
That's Copenhagen.
Copenhagen. Sorry, close.
Well, or rather outside.
And I do know we do have some listeners in Germany, and I do know, Urban, you're going to be touring there in September, right, with your band Blend.
Yeah.
So if you want to see Urban and his band Blend, you can go to Germany.
Where can they find out information about it?
Blend, do you have a website?
Blend.de if you're in Germany.
Blend.de.
You can go to myspace.com/blend1 if you feel inclined.
The number one?
Number one.
And we'll
put
a link to that on our podcast page. So thank you very much for joining us. It was really great. Guys, you doing anything interesting, Rob?
You love to ask that question. I'm recuperating from a very energetic vacation, and it's very relaxing to be back at work, but I had a great time and got all my vacationing out of the way early in the summer because there's a lot of work coming up. So
that's great.
It's good to be back at work.
Bobby, are you working on anything?
Yeah, I've actually been cranking, actually. Just finished two more CDs from a Trailer Trash Music Library thing, which is doing really well, and I'm cutting cello and starting the disco live. I've been doing this forever. I'm doing 12 disco songs for a music library, but it's all live. Live drums, no loops.
Oh, that's great.
Real strings, real brass.
I heard some of it. Sounds very vibey.
It's
very
a vibe. It's definitely
nostalgic.
Nostalgic. Yeah. It's really lovely. It's pretty cool. And I'm just learning Sibelius now because that's kicking my ass.
Oh, Sibelius is great. I'm a big fan. Big fan of Sibelius.
Help me out. How do you switch it on? No. And there's little lines and the dotty bits. And I'm anyway, no. I'd love a lesson sometime. Anyway, that's what I'm doing, and a bunch of other junk.
Great. Martin.
Yeah, I was recently over at Bobby's studio because Bobby helped me master my new album. So we did
which is excellent. Now, I'll keep saying it, and I'm not saying it just because she's my mate and he's a friend, but it's...
I was very lucky to have Bobby involved in doing the final preparation for it. So that was great fun. And I finished the track for Abrazos, the website for that is a breast cancer charity. That track's just gone off, and that's going to be released in October.
Oh, that's great.
And today I went out and bought a brand new Taylor acoustic guitar. The Grand Symphony. Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful guitar. And I also bought an acoustic bass as well.
Wow.
A Fender acoustic bass. Yeah, so I'm in my folk period yet again.
Wow, kumbaya.
6-8 coming your way.
There you go.
Well, that's great.
But we never ask you what you're up to, Mikey. How's your week been?
Oh, it's hellacious.
Hellacious hard work, yeah?
Yeah, I'm working on a bunch of stuff I can't talk about because I just can't talk about it.
And you're working on my EPK as well,
yes,
aren't you?
Yes, editing the EPK.
That's good.
I do want to make an announcement, though. We are going to be starting a video segment on the Audio Nowcast.
Ah.
And it's going to be called the Audio Nowcast Spaces.
Great.
And we're going to be going into some of the studios of some of the guys here, actually pretty much everybody here. And,
really?
Yeah, so we're probably going to start with Rob's studio.
There'll be film of your cat, Bobby, writing.
That's right.
Exactly.
Right. The next number one.
And it's going to be, they'll be released through YouTube, and there's going to be a link on our website, and we're going to probably do one once a month. So it'll be kind of fun.
Brilliant.
And I've got that all lined up, got everything lined up to do.
Excellent.
That.
Do you have, Urban, anything you need to plug? Now would be the magic moment. Any projects, or should we just focus everybody on Blend World?
I'm working on so many different projects at the same time. I just finished recordings for Julia Albert. You can check that out on myspace/JuliaAlbertMusic.com if you want to, that I've produced and mixed one of the tracks.
And I've actually heard that stuff is pretty good.
Great.
And, as always, I'm always working on tracks for 98-pound Weakling. I have the new single of our band that's going to be done hopefully tonight or tomorrow that we're sending to Germany. That's what they're releasing next. And
what label are you on in Germany?
It's called Noteworks.
Okay.
Small independent label, but, you know, they like us and they want us to come over and play. And I frankly think it's really a lot of fun, you know.
Good stuff.
I get to go there and have a good time. And
half the battle is getting a label that believes in you, so that's good.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Thank you for joining with us. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And we also have a MySpace page that's myspace.com/audionowcast. And I also want to give a plug out really quick before we go to Ken Kane. Ken Kane's our engineer, and he's taken over the post-production of the podcast.
Really?
Yes, so he's going to be doing the...
Oh, so no one's going to get to hear any of this.
The mixing.
This will be the only part they hear, actually.
And now what's happened to April? I want to know.
No, April, she's coming back. She misses us all. I talked to her today. She is coming back.
Okay.
She
just want to check.
Couldn't make these last couple of podcasts, but she said she will be there for the next one, and she does miss you guys. So,
cool.
April is coming back. All right. Well, from myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio.